भगवते वासुदेवाय
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 24 मत्स्य द लॉर्ड्स फिश इन कैटफिश टेक्स्ट 15
तम
आत्मनो
रोग्रहर्तम
प्रीत्या मत्स्य
वपुर
दार
Janan
Rakshanartaya
Rakshanartaya
Shaparya
Shaparya
Sa
Mano
Dadhe Unto the fish
Atmana
Personal
Anugraha Artam
To show favor
Pritya,
very much pleased.
Matsya
Vapudaram,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
who had assumed the form of the fish,
Ajanan,
without knowledge of this,
Rakshana Artaya,
just to give protection,
Shaparya,
of the fish,
Sa,
the king,
Mana,
mind,
Dadhe,
decided.
Translation.
To please himself, King Satyavrata, not knowing that the fish was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, decided with great pleasure to give the fish protection. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here is an example of giving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead even without knowledge. Such service is called Agyata Sukriti. King Satyavrata wanted to show his own mercy, not knowing that the fish was Lord Vishnu. By such unknowing devotional service, one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Service rendered to the Supreme Lord, knowingly or unknowingly, never goes in vain. Tamatmano nugrahartam pritya matsya vapura daram ajanan rakshanartaya shaparya samano tate. To please himself, King Satyavrata, not knowing that the fish was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, decided with great pleasure to give the fish protection. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here, Srila Prabhupada is explaining the purport how King Satyavrata, he just, of his own accord, became inspired to help this fish, which was in some sort of appealing for some assistance, appealing for some type of protection. So as a king, he was in this type of mood, type of consciousness of giving protection. This is natural. Natural duty for the Kshatriyas, one of them at least, is to give protection to those who are distressed. And they always must do this. They have to do that. No matter what the risk may be or possible possible types of detrimental things that may come, still they have to do that. Just like we know the story of King Shibi. He was a Kshatriya. He was approached by a bird. And the bird was being chased by a hawk. So the bird appealed to Maharaj Shibi. I think that was a pigeon, if I remember correctly. First bird. So he appealed to King Shibi that, "You please protect me. I'm also a resident. I'm one of the praja, the citizens, because I've taken birth in your kingdom, so you have to protect me." And King Shibi said, "Oh yes, of course." So he stood there. In between the pigeon and the hawk, and he stopped the hawk and told the hawk that, "Now, this is one of my citizens, so I'm protecting him, so you can't kill him." But then the hawk said, "Well, I'm also one of your citizens. I'm also one of your dependents. So you have to look after me too. And I have to eat. And I'm a hawk, so I'm not a vegetarian. I only eat meat. And I've chosen this bird. This is the only possibility around for me. If I don't eat this pigeon, I'll be in trouble. So you have to look after me too." So this was a dilemma for King Shibi. So he then, what he did was, he took a weighing, balancing scale. He put weight on one side and then weight on the other side until it balances and like that. And so he put the pigeon on one side and he himself, he put the pigeon on one side, then he started cutting his flesh off his body, putting it on the other side, because his idea was just to give as much of his flesh as would balance the weight of the pigeon, which wouldn't be so much. Of course, it wouldn't be very nice either, but it wouldn't be too much. Pigeons are small. But anyway, somehow this pigeon was getting heavier and heavier, and Maharaj Shibi was cutting more and more and more flesh off his body until there was no more flesh left. But still the pigeon was heavier. So then Maharaj Shibi just thought, "Well, all right." So he just stood on the scales himself. Then it balanced. But then the pigeon and the hawk revealed that they were Lord Indra and Agni, two demigods, and they were just testing him. So anyway, our point is that for the Kshatriyas, they're duty bound. No matter what the risk, no matter what the cost to themselves, they are duty bound, they have to do this. Otherwise they have to give up their positions as Kshatriyas, as kings, and like this. They have to give these positions up if they cannot fulfill these responsibilities. In this case, to give protection to their dependent citizens, who in effect, in a certain sense, are just like their children. It should be like that. The king is meant to see it like that. Just like any parent will surely protect their children, even if there's danger. They'll be very concerned, naturally, and do whatever can be done. So the king is also meant to feel like that. So here was King Satyavrata then, kneeling down to drink some water by the edge of a lake. And this little fish, as he was taking the water, little fish just jumped into his hand. And the king thought, "Well, I'll put you into a river." But the fish had some other idea. He didn't want to go into a river. Why was that? Oh, because he was a little fish. And there were big fish in the river. And he didn't want to. He didn't want to get eaten by the little fish, so he appealed to the king. You, please protect me. I'm also one of your citizens. Don't put me in the river where I'll be in danger. You give me a safe place. So here we see King Satyavrata in his mood as a Kshatriya. He immediately responds, oh yes, I'll do that. Immediately. He's fully, just completely ready to do the needful, to give protection. And anyway, we'll see how it develops over the next few days. But the point that Srila Prabhupada is bringing out here is that King Satyavrata, he was not aware at all that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I should render service to him and facilitate him and do whatever he wants and whatever will please him. King Satyavrata, he was just thinking that I'm a king. I'm the local king. This is one of my citizens, one of my dependents. He's appealing to me for protection, so I must do it. I want to do it. So in this way, he was pleased to do something for the fish. However, the fish was not just some ordinary fish, but he was actually Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when King Satyavrata was thinking how to look after the fish and help the fish and serve the fish and satisfy the fish and please the fish, actually he was thinking how to please the Lord. That's what he was thinking. But the thing was that he didn't know it. He didn't know it. He thought this was just some situation within my kingdom which happens from time to time, that I just get approached by some resident for some type of assistance and I have to do it. And I know I have to do it and I want to do it because I feel that benevolent attitude and fatherly attitude towards my citizens. So here we have another one. So I just have to do it here, and that's nice, so I'll do it. So in that mood, as a king, as a Kshatriya, he actually did something which pleased Krishna, Lord Vishnu. This is actually what happened. But the difference between what he did, which pleased the Lord, and what, for example, someone who does know, some devotee, particularly pure devotee, who certainly knows that I'm doing this activity for the pleasure of the Lord, I'm doing it for his service, this is why I'm doing it, this is why I want to do it, to please my Lord. The difference is, in the case of King Satyavrata, the lack of knowledge. So therefore, in a certain sense, in a more strict sense at least, what King Satyavrata is doing right now is not, in a strict sense, not exactly devotional service, because it's not devotional. There isn't, in his consciousness and how he's doing it, there is not a mood of devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is more some material mood of doing one's duty materially, in terms of one's varna. One has to do one's duty, otherwise one will be impious and one will get some sinful reactions. So it was in that mood that he was doing it. Not in the mood of devotion, that this is my Lord and I am the eternal servant of my Lord. So I must do whatever my Lord wants. If he wants me to take him away and put him somewhere else in some safer environment, nicer environment, whatever environment he wants, I'll do it for my Lord as a service out of affection for my Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is not the case here. It was just a matter that this is my dependent citizen, I'm a Kshatriya, I have to do these things, so therefore I'm doing it. So Srila Prabhupada here uses the term agyata sukriti. That is really what King Satyavrata was doing. Agyata Sukrit. Agyata means unknowing. There's gyan, knowledge, and agyan, ignorance. So this is agyan, agyata Sukriti. Unknowing, he's ignorant of what are the real facts. But still, it is Sukriti. It may not exactly be unknowing bhakti, because bhakti, for bhakti to, for an activity to be bhakti, well, Srila Rupa Goswami gives quite an in-depth definition in the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which we all know very well. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karana jnavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttamam. That uttama bhakti, pure devotional service, means that one is serving Krishna in a favorable attitude, and favorable means that I'm doing this for Krishna because I want to. I'm doing it as an offering to Krishna to please my Lord. This is part of the consideration of favorability, that the devotee is deliberately doing it and doing it out of the desire to please the Lord, satisfy him by rendering that service. So, that's bhakti. But in this case, it was activity which was pleasing to the Lord, but there was no consciousness like that. It was just, as we have said, kshatriya doing his duty, which he wanted to do. He was inspired. He liked doing that. But that mood of trying to please the Lord, that this is a service to the Lord, that was not there. It was a jnana. So it wasn't really bhakti, but sukriti, that it was, sukriti. Su means good, and kriti, krita, it means meritorious activity, or some activity at least, there, or some merit actually, but merit, sukriti means some meritorious activity, done in a good way, or some the use of some merit for a good purpose. So Prabhupada, elsewhere Srila Prabhupada explains that there is sukrita and duskrita. Yes, sukrita means there's some merit there and it's being used for a good purpose. Duskrita means there's some merit there, but it's being used for a bad purpose. Srila Prabhupada, well, this is clearly an example of sukrita, but Srila Prabhupada explains duskrita, that some thief, he has some merit, he's clever, so that is some merit on his part. He's not just some silly fool who can't do anything. No, he has some merit, he has some ability, but he's using it for some bad purpose. So he's duskrita. Whereas some other person has some merit, some intelligence, some ability. So they have some merit, but they're using it in a good way. This is sukrita. Yes, yeah, so here we see. This is King Satyavrata doing some agyata sukriti, unknowing, beneficial activity, very good activity, with great merit, and using his ability in that way. But unknowingly, he's not aware at all of what the real consequences are, what is going on here, what I'm really doing. Yes, so, like this, he is pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, getting benefit from that, even though it is not exactly in a devotional spirit, and it is done in ignorance. So, in this way, people gradually come to actually be devotees after some time, through doing this type of activity. This type of activity has natural consequences. The natural consequences are that if you do it, even like we say in ignorance and so on, but if you do it, then you get a certain type of result. And what is that result? You get some actual impetus towards devotional service. Some attraction arises towards devotional service. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead feels inclined to give mercy, so he gives mercy in due course. This is the result. These are the results of Ajñāta Sukriti. This is what happened to King Satyavrata. The Supreme Personality of Godhead was pleased, even though King Satyavrata was not doing it devotionally and not doing it knowingly, but the Lord became pleased and revealed himself, and in this way King Satyavrata's Krishna consciousness became established. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita there's one purport. It's in the 22nd chapter of the Madhya Leela, where Lord Chaitanya is instructing Srila Sanatana Goswami in all the main principles of devotional service, from the very beginning to the topmost level, going right through all the different major considerations step by step to the level of perfection. So there, where Lord Chaitanya is talking about how people come from the material platform and then come to the beginnings of the spiritual platform, Krishna conscious platform. So there's one purport there where the discussion is going on like that. And in the purport, actually Srila Prabhupada refers to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes the point that there are three types of Ajñāta Sukriti, which have three types of results. The results being the development of some impotence within the person to a certain activity, which is like a step beyond what they're already doing, a progression from whatever the Ajñāta Sukriti is. So those three types of Ajñāta Sukriti, Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, Prabhupada describes, that there's one, it is called Bhog Unmukhi Sukriti. Bhog, we know, means material sense gratification. Bhog Unmukhi Sukriti. That means unknowingly performed good activity, which by its nature will bring one, will be an impetus which will bring one sense gratification in the future. Unknowingly one does some material pious activity, in other words. Unknowingly. Just like in the case of King Shibi, we told that story how he was willing to give his life for the benefit of those birds, of that bird, well, of both birds actually. So they were demigods. They were not actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even though Srila Prabhupada himself told the story, and so it is an important example, but we should understand that the result he got from it was not advancement in Krishna consciousness, but it was advancement in demigod worship, actually. Because they were his two main deities as a demigod worshipper. So he got some Bhog Unmukhi Sukriti. He didn't know that these are demigods and that I'm doing something to satisfy me. They're testing me to see what I'm prepared to do for their satisfaction and to fulfill my material duty. So, like that, in his case, he didn't know. He was actually pleasing these demigods, in fact. But through doing his duty in that way, he got some material result, material benefit. So that's one type of Ajñāta Sukriti. Then there is Moksha Unmukhi Sukriti. Moksh Unmukhi Sukriti means some. Of course, whether it's done knowingly or unknowingly may not even be so much important, but it's some pious activity. Moksh Unmukhi Sukriti is some pious activity which is of the nature that it will give one an impetus towards liberation. It may not exactly be that you are trying to become liberated, but still it will give some impetus in the direction of liberation and some attraction for taking up a process which will actually give liberation. And just like if someone does some austerity, and just like in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, there's the story of Narada Muni cursing Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, sons of Kuvera, who were puffed up and just playing naked with young women and wouldn't even cover themselves when Narada Muni came upon the scene. So Narada Muni cursed them to become trees. And he told them, well, he thought, at least, he thought that people who are very poor, they have nothing. So they're living very austere lives. Maybe some days they can't eat anything. And maybe they have no proper place to live there. Perhaps they just live under a tree somewhere sometimes. So they're actually in a very renounced position. Whereas, but it's just not their choice, it's just force of circumstances. But some other people who are living in some materially opulent situation, they think, yes, I must get liberated, I'm too materially entangled. I want to get out of this entanglement. So I'll go and live in the forest with nothing. So they do it voluntarily, deliberately. So now, they also, some days they may not eat. Maybe they just get some berries or just some very, very simple food. Nothing nice. Just whatever little bit they can get somehow. And they're also sleeping under the tree. But it's all specifically as an effort, part of the effort, to become free from material entanglement, to become liberated. So Narada Muni is thinking about what to do to help Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. So he thinks that if I put these boys into poverty, so they're living like that, then they will get the same benefit, even though it's not their deliberate effort to become free from material attachment, but they will get the same benefit as those people who are deliberately trying to become detached, and therefore they're accepting inconvenience and austerity like that. So that's there. In the Krishna books, Prabhupada discusses that there in the 10th canto, in the Krishna books. So, like this, there's moksha mukhi sukriti. A person may not necessarily be thinking, I want impersonal liberation. But he does something. Somehow, he gets himself into a situation where he's renounced, lacking material facilities, living some austere lifestyle, even just briefly, something like that. So, that gives that result, that in due course, some attraction will arise within his heart for becoming liberated, action. Not just something done without that idea in mind. Then, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about bhakti unmukhi sukriti. That the person does something which is not really devotional service, as we mentioned. Like in this case here, just unknowing. even that it's for the Supreme Lord and it's going to please him. But they do something which does please the Supreme Lord, something which is offered to the Supreme Lord. It's part of his service. Even though they have no devotion, or in a case like this, they don't even know it's like that. So they get a result, and the result is an impotence. They become inclined within the heart. The Supreme Personality of Godhead gives them the inspiration. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prabhupada says here, by such unknowing devotional service, one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Lord, within the heart, from within the heart, the Lord gives that inspiration that now the person actually becomes attracted to being a devotee. And they get further opportunity to do more. And gradually they become attracted more and more. And it becomes more and more deliberate until they're devotees. And they're absorbed in devotional service. So these three types of Sukriti or Agyata Sukriti, of course it may be knowing or unknowing, but generally we talk of it in terms of being unknown. Activities, though, which are not done specifically in that way, but they help one. They provide an impetus for going in that direction in due course. So this is the case with King Satyavrata. And this is one of the main activities of this movement as preachers. Of course, we're trying to make people devotees, but in so many cases it's a step-by-step, gradual and slow process. Now, we give the person a book, and they may not know that this is all part of the process of me becoming a pure devotee. Some of them, like Hindu people, may think that yes, this is part of Hinduism, meaning part of my pious kind of materialistic religiosity. I should take this book from the Swami and give a donation. Other people who are not Hindus, they may think, oh, this is a book about some philosophy, something like that. Some people may even think that, oh boy, I better take the book and give them some money to get rid of them. You know, different ideas may be there, which in so many cases will not be the actual idea that here I am engaging in devotional service. This is all part of pleasing Krishna as part of my duty as an eternal spirit soul. We give people prasadam, and some people, they just take it because they're hungry. Some people just take it because it tastes good. And they're not thinking that this is a form of the Supreme Lord. I'm actually respecting the Supreme Lord by taking this prasadam. It's pure spiritual food offered to the Lord. They may just have some other idea. Chanting Hare Krishna, some people, they hear the chanting, they just like it. They may not know what it is at all. They think it's just just sounds nice. Or sometimes a devotee needs some help, so he just stops someone on the street and that person helps them. So what do they think? They think that I'm just helping a person. But actually, they're being connected up through that activity, through the devotee. They're being connected with Krishna. But they're not thinking, let me do some service, devotional service for Krishna or the devotee. Just a material mood of being helpful. So like this, this is one of the main activities, one of the main considerations in this movement, that we must engage people. We must give people a chance to do something, to connect with Krishna. If we don't give them a chance, nobody else is. So therefore we go and we try in so many ways to contact the people, involve the people, engage the people in the process, even though they may have some other idea They may have some other idea, but that we don't worry about too much. Just get them engaged to start off with. Just like Valmiki. Valmiki, the great compiler of Ramayana. Prior to his doing that, he was a rogue. He was a criminal. Very violent, horrible criminal. So, of course, it's a bit of a long story, but eventually Narada Muni got him to understand that he was doing the wrong thing and he had to change his ways. So Narada Muni wanted to get him to chant the holy names of the Lord, but Valmiki was too impious. He just couldn't utter the name of God. So Narada Muni got him then to chant the name, the term, Mara, which means dead. And Valmiki, he liked that. So he thought, yes, I can chant this. So he chanted, Mara, Mara, Mara. And he was actually thinking, he was not really thinking, this is service to God. I'm trying to please the Lord. I should do it nicely without offenses and so on and so forth. He was just thinking, yes, death, death, death. But Mara, around the other way is Rama. So he didn't know, but he was being engaged in Namabhas. And it's sort of somewhat indirect form of devotional service, Krishna-related activity like that. So in due course, he became the great saint, Valmiki, through this, and this alone, initially. And the whole Ramayana was revealed within his heart, and then he compiled it, and like that it became available to human society. But it was not his idea that I want to be a devotee of Rama, I want to glorify Rama by chanting his name. It was not his idea. He couldn't do it. Yeah, so devotees are like that. Devotees are always thinking how to engage people so that their dormant Krishna consciousness will be reawakened, so they can become again connected with Krishna, get a little taste for it, and in due course they'll become inspired that, yes, I want to do this. I like this. It's nice. Similarly, we saw in the fourth canto, Dhruva Maharaj. He just wanted a kingdom. And Narada Muni also came to him and tried to convince him, don't worry about the kingdom. Just become Krishna conscious and just forget about the kingdom. But Dhruva told him, you know, I'm sorry. I appreciate you trying to help me. I can't do it. I just want a kingdom. That's what I want. So if you can help me with that, please do. If you can't, sorry. So Narada then instructed him in a process. It's like a process of austerity and meditation, which he said, and it's true, it was for achieving some goal like that materially. So Dhruva was satisfied that, yes, this is a good thing. I will achieve I'll get my kingdom through doing this. But Narada included some Krishna consciousness, which Narada knew, because Dhruva would be doing these things every day, it would act in that way to awaken Dhruva's Krishna consciousness and become an impetus towards devotional service. But he didn't tell Dhruva that. In other words, it was a transcendental trick that you think you're achieving one thing, and you are achieving one thing, but at the same time, you're actually achieving a greater thing, but you don't really know that. So like this, Dhruva Maharaj, due to Narada's skillful engaging him in Krishna-conscious, Krishna-related activity, Dhruva's Krishna consciousness was aroused, and he became a pure devotee. So like this, of course we may not be, we aren't Narada Munis, but still, we should try to do like this and help people like this, one way or another, somehow or other. Give them Krishna consciousness and help them until it takes its effect, and then we'll see. They start to move forward more of their own accords. But this is the beginning stages of preaching. how to get a person started somehow. Somehow get the person started in Krishna consciousness. Any comments or questions? Causes means there's no material cause. There are causes. Krishna's pleased. He reciprocates. Prabhupada says here, by such unknowing devotional service, one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's like that. So there's no material cause. Yeah. There's no material cause. The Lord, out of His mercy, out of His mercy, just gives some benefit. Yeah. So it's like that. Of course, you know, the Lord doesn't have to do that. So, in other words, it's not mechanical. But it's the Lord's personal inspiration. So therefore we can say it's causeless also in that sense. Because mercy means causeless. Something to be mercy, it has to be causeless. In the sense that, you know, if someone gives you 100 rands, just like that, they don't owe you anything. They just, out of their mercy, they do. Then it's causeless. That mercy is causeless. It's not that they owe you the money. That would be a cause. Someone else owes you 100 rands and gives you 100 rands. So it's not mercy. It's not causeless. It's just, you know, they have to do it. So like that, mercy. Mercy implies causelessness. It's just the person's inclination. Just their goodwill. That they feel that they want to do like that. Srila Prabhupada ki.